Chapter 65. Scene 3, the field of Salamanca, the battlefield and undulating, and sandy expanses lying under the sultry sun of a July afternoon. In the immediate left foreground rises boldly a detached dome-like hill known as the Lesser Arapail, now held by English troops. Further back, and more to the right, rises another and larger hill of the kind the Greater Arapail. This is crowned with French artillery in loud action, and the French Marshal, Marmont, Duke of Ragusa, stands there. Further to the right, in the same plain, stretch the divisions of the French army. Still further to the right, in the distance, on the Ciudad Rodrigo highway, a cloud of dust denotes the English baggage train seeking security in that direction. The city of Salamanca itself, and the river Tormes on which it stands, are behind the back of the spectator. On the summit of the lesser hill, close at hand, Wellington, glassed eye, watches the French division under Thomier, which has become separated from the center of the French army. Round and near him are aides and other officers, in animated conjecture on Marmont's intent, which appears to be a move on the Ciudad Rodrigo road aforesaid, under the impression that the English are about to retreat that way. The English commander descends from where he was standing to a nook under a wall, where a meal is roughly laid out. Some of his staff are already eating there. Wellington takes a few mouthfuls without sitting down, walks back again, and looks through his glass at the battle as before. Balls from the French artillery fall around. Enter his aide-de-camp, Fitzroy Somerset.
Fitzroy Somerset, hurriedly. The French make movements of grave consequence extending to the left in mass, my lord.
Wellington, I have just perceived as much, but not the cause.
He regards longer.
Marmont's good genius is deserting him.
Shutting up his glass with a snap, Wellington calls several aides and dispatches them down the hill. He goes back behind the wall and takes some more mouthfuls.
By God, Fitzroy, if we shan't do it now.
To Somerset,
Monsieur Lava, Marmont est perdu.
To his Spanish attaché,
Fitzroy Somerset, thinking we mean to attack on him, he schemes to swoop on our retreating line.
Wellington, and to cloak it by this cannonade. With that in eye he has bundled leftwardly Thomier's division. Mindless that thereby his wing and center's mutual maintenance has gone, and left a yawning vacancy. So be it.
Good. His laxness is our luck.
As a result of the orders sent off by the aides, several British divisions advance across the French front on the Greater Arapail and elsewhere. The French shower bullets into them, but an English brigade under pack assails the nearer French on the Arapail, now beginning to cannonade the English in the hollows beneath. Light breezes blow toward the French, and they get in their faces the dust clouds, and smoke from the masses of English in motion, and a powerful sun in their eyes. Marmont and his staff are sitting on the top of the Greater Arapail only half a cannon shot from Wellington on the lesser, and, like Wellington, he is gazing through his glass. Spirit of rumor, appearing to behold the full map mind of his opponent, Marmont arrows forth aid after aid towards the forest's rim, to spirit on his troops emerging thence, and prop the lone division Thomier, for whose recall his voice has rung in vain. Wellington mounts and seeks out Pakenham, who pushes to the arena from the right, and, spurting to the left of Marmont's line, shakes Thomier with lunges Leonin. When the maneuver's meaning hits his sense, Marmont eyes hotly to the imperiled place, where see him fall, sore smitten. Bonnet rides and dons the burden of the chief command, marking dismayed the Thomier column there shut up by Pakenham like bellows folds against the English 4th and 5th hard by. And while thus crushed, Dragoon Guards and Dragoons, under La Marchant's hands of Guernsey,
are launched upon them by Sir Stapleton, and their scathed files are double scathed anon. Cotton falls wounded. Pakenham's bayoneteers shape for the charge from column into rank, and Thomier finds death there at point blank. Semi-chorus of the pities,
aerial music,
In fogs of dust the cavalry's hoof the ground. Their prancing squadrons shake the hills around. La Marchant's heavies bear with ominous bound against their opposites. Semi-chorus 2, a bullet crying along the cloven air gouges La Marchant's groin and rankles there, and death's white sleep he soon joins Thomier, and all he has fought for, quits.
In the meantime the battle has become concentrated in the middle hollow, and Wellington descends thither from the English aeropale. The fight grows fiercer. Cole and Leith now fall wounded. Then Beresford, who directs the Portuguese, is struck down and borne away. On the French side fall Bonnet, who succeeded Marmont in command, Mann, Clausel, and Fury, the last hit mortally. Their disordered main body retreats into the forest and disappears. And just as darkness sets in, the English stand alone on the crest, the distant plain being lighted only by musket flashes from the vanquishing enemy. In the close foreground, vague figures on horseback are audible in the gloom. Voice of Wellington, I thought they looked as they'd be scurrying soon. Voice of an aide, Foy bears into the wood in middling trim. Mockune strikes out for Alba Castle Bridge. Voice of Wellington, speed the pursuit then, towards the Huerta Ford. Their only scantling of escape lies there. The river coops them semicircle wise, and we shall have them like a swathe of grass within a sickle's curve. Voice of aid, too late, my lord. They are crossing by the aforesaid bridge at Alba. Voice of Wellington, impossible. The guns of Carlos Racket shear from the castle walls. Voice of aid, tidings have sped just now therefrom, to this undreamed effect, that Carlos has withdrawn the garrison. The French command the Alba Bridge themselves. Voice of Wellington, blast him, he's disobeyed his orders, then. How happened this? How long has it been known? Voice of aid, some lady some few hours have rumored it, but unbelieved. Voice of Wellington, well, what's done can't be undone. ... By God, though, they've just saved themselves thereby from capture to a man. Voice of a general, we've not struck ill, despite this slip, my lord. ... And have you heard that Colonel Dalbiac's wife rode in the charge behind her spouse today? Voice of Wellington, did she though? Did she? Why, that must be Susanna, whom I know a Wessex woman, blithe, and somewhat fair. ... Not, but great irregularities arise from such exploits. And was it she I noticed wandering to and fro below here, just as the French retired? Voice of another officer, ah no, my lord. That was the wife of Prescott of the 7th, hoping beneath the heel of hopelessness, as these young women will. Just about sunset she found him lying dead and bloody there, and in the dusk we bore them both away. 18.
Voice of Wellington, well, I'm damn sorry for her. Though I wish the women folk would keep them to the rear. Much awkwardness attends their pottering round.
The talking shapes disappear, and as the features of the field grow undistinguishable, the comparative quiet is broken by gay notes from guitars, and castanets in the direction of the city, and other sounds of popular rejoicing at Wellington's victory. People come dancing out from the town, and the merrymaking continues till midnight, when it ceases, and darkness and silence prevail everywhere.
Semi-chorus I of the years,
aerial music,
what are space and time? A fancy. Lo, by vision's necromancy Muscovy will now unroll, wherefore cork and olive tree starveling firs and birches be. Semi-chorus 2, though such features lie afar from events peninsular, these, amid their dust and thunder, form with those, as scarce asunder, parts of one compacted whole. Chorus, Marmont said, then, like a swallow let us follow, 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 over hill and over hollow, past the plains of Toot and Pole.
There is semblance of a sound in the darkness, as of a rushing through the air.
Scene IV, the field of Borodino.
Borodino, 70 miles west of Moscow, is revealed in a bird's eye view from a point above the position of the French Grand Army, advancing on the Russian capital. We are looking east, towards Moscow and the Army of Russia, which bars the way thither. The sun of latter summer, sinking behind our backs, floods the whole prospect, which is mostly wild, uncultivated land with patches of birch trees. Napoleon's army has just arrived on the scene, and is making its bivouac for the night, some of the later regiments not having yet come up. A dropping fire of musketry from skirmishers ahead keeps snapping through the air. The Emperor's tent stands in a ravine in the foreground amid the squares of the Old Guard. Aides and other officers are chatting outside. Enter Napoleon, who dismounts, speaks to some of his suite, and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.